Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, March 11th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody.
Well, with all the hoopla and over the stimulus and everything crazy that's going on in D.C., we have gold today getting a little bit of pressure. Not much, $2, $1,725. But early on in the day, we had a high of $1,735, up $10. So, you know, they always do it in the last hour or so of trade. It's just what they do. Silver was down 9 cents today, still at 26.21. Still a not a bad day in the precious metals. Platinum was down 7 at 1,200. Palladium was up 34, 2,406. The USDX was down 0.41, 91.37. Crude oil was up $1.65 at 66.09. And let's go ahead and see the markets were mostly positive, but they were also having their own reversals. They were busy today, so I didn't have a chance to follow the news to see what was moving the markets today. And so let's see what the 10-year yield. 10-year yield is 1.53%. Usually I get a correction in the numbers here in just a few minutes. But the Dow was up about 180 points today at 32,485. The NASDAQ was up 329, 2.5% to 13,398. S&P was up $40 at 39.39. The Euro was 120, still holding there. And I mean, what an incredible run for Bitcoin. 57,000 for Bitcoin. I mean, that really is. It was up 1.5% today, almost 58,000. It's really just an incredible. But you know what? If you got that big money flowing in there like Musk, $1.5 billion, hey, put that in gold and see what the price of gold would do. But no, they don't want something that's real, not when their belief is in technology and how it's going to hurt us even. I don't know. I think there's more cons than pros when it comes to all this technology. But we'll see. We'll see what happens, Dave. And
bonds, contrarians, and con artists. What can you say?
Yeah. How are we going to start out the program? Do you want to go ahead and, let me go ahead and do it. We're going to talk about jobless claims. They remain above pre-pandemic levels. That news comes along today as the economy continues to shake off these impacts from the last year. And the Labor Department reported that first-time filings for unemployment insurance in the week that ended March 6th were seasonally adjusted 712,000. And that was below economists' estimates of 725,000. Filings for state jobless aid, seen as a proxy for layoffs, that slowed slightly in recent weeks, but it still remains solidly above the pre-pandemic levels. And let's see. And I guess the markets are moving, thinking that with the rollout of these vaccines, everybody will be out shopping. I don't think I guess working would be more important than shopping, but then shopping is what our economy runs on, so you need to work in order to shop. But the problem is, as busy as Amazon is and all of these online sellers, I mean, people didn't stop shopping during the past year. Or did they, Dave?
Yeah, it was down, although not nearly as much as we would have expected. I mean, holiday shopping was much stronger than expected going into the season. I mean, just some of the dynamics really changed with still more people buying online rather than going to malls. Of course, many of which were closed in any event. But we also see that the continuing jobless claims decreased again, falling almost 200,000 to 4.1 million. That's another low during the pandemic, but still a significant number. Now, we know from last Friday's jobs reports that employers added 379,000 jobs in February, mainly because of strong hiring back at restaurants and bars. Meanwhile, the government stimulus helped spur household income and spending in January as well, when U.S. Treasury dispersed tens of millions of $600 payments prior to the $1,400 that are going to be going out as early as next week to those with direct deposit on their income taxes, thanks to this $1.9 trillion package that the president signed into law a little while ago. Now, many economists are saying that bill scheduled will catapult the rate of U.S. economic growth to multi-year highs later this year. We've seen figures ranging from, well, frankly, 4% to as high as 10%. But
ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, median now, closer to 7%. But we know that fixing the jobs market is going to be the biggest challenge in our economic picture. Now, though the government's U6 unemployment rate has tumbled from a pandemic-era high of 22.5% last April to just under 12% in February, there are still huge gaps in employment in this country. And notice we're transitioning to the use of U6 rather than the bogus U3 because I say they're virtually meaningless. As we've been talking and writing about for the last few weeks. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, still more than 20 million Americans continuing to receive some kind of unemployment compensation. So I suggest everyone stop talking about a rebound, much less recovery.
Ditto. And you know, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the 1.9 stimulus bill, but I'm just worn out with it. I mean, we've been over it, several times. And, you know, it really is sad because there's just so much in there that is pork, is just not necessary. And it isn't, I mean, okay, so let's give the employment and the people and so forth. Fine, let that trickle down. But there's so little of it that's trickling down out of the 1.9. And I don't think those numbers have been exaggerated in any way. I heard there's just about $1 trillion that isn't even going to be spent until the next couple of years. So that tells you just how weak this economy is and that they need that, plus discussions of infrastructure spending and everything else that's going to be created. So where does it end? Because it's going to. And that's the sad thing. We're going to be forward, but by them continuing to extend things as they do, it's going to be far worse when that day of reckoning comes. And that's the same. You think people are hungry now? Just wait. They won't be able to afford food. And then where it's going to come from? Because everybody else is going to be broke. Government ain't going to pay for it because they're broke. And I know a lot of people think, well, it's not going to happen here in the United States. We're better than that. Anyway, I'm not going to be ranting, but I guess I started to. But it's just, it's sad. It breaks my heart. Just to see this, the division and the recklessness. And it's like no one, what are the real issues? What is really wrong with this country with the unemployment and what they've done to these people who have been put out of business this past year. I mean, the people have been devastated. Everybody's jolly because Wall Street's jolly because $1.9 trillion and $2 trillion the year before and $5 trillion this year. Doesn't matter what administration it is. It's all going to be the same. But yet people rejoice. Because they know it's all on the backs of the citizens of this nation. They don't have anything to do with it. They reap the rewards while we pay for it. And it's like, and even the so-called fiscally responsible rhinos, well, they don't even, they complain, they whine, but what they do the past 4 years? It's we applauded. The people who are Republican applaud the Republicans, the Democrats who are they applaud the Democratic politicians. It's like, really? Jeez. It breaks my heart to see what's going on. And yet, hey, you know, let's just keep doing it. The definition of insanity. And yet, you know, I'm sorry, Dave. Maybe it was that extra coffee I had this morning. But it just boggles the mind. And you know what? In a couple of days, everybody's going to forget about the $1.9 trillion, just like we forgot about the $2 trillion earlier this year. We forget about the Fed printing $80 billion a day or a month buying treasuries just so they can go deeper and deeper in debt. As long as I can keep doing what I'm doing or whatever, everything's okay. You know, maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. It's just insane. But anyway, European Union, they're getting ready to increase money printing. They're ready to pick up its money printing to keep a lid on the Eurozone borrowing costs, signaling to skeptical markets it was determined to lay the foundation of a solid economic recovery. That's all we want. Do whatever you need to do just so we have that solid economic recovery. Concern that a rise in bond yields could derail a rebound across the 19 countries that share the euro. The ECB said it would use its 1.85 trillion euro pandemic emergency purchase program. That's a long one. Known as PEEP. He makes these cute little words. So they can spend a 1.85 trillion euro pandemic emergency purchase program. PEEP. Anyway. What was ours? P-E-E? So the E wasn't ours?
P-P-P.
Yeah.
Triple P, P-cubed. I like P-cubed.
Jeez, Luigi. But anyway, then they're going to be adding. But, you know, they're just calming the markets. They just want everybody to remain calm. And that's what it's all about. I saw today the European growth in the viruses was up 50%. So does that mean more lockdowns for Europe? What did Christine Lagarde have to say about that, Dave?
Well, Chrissy, you ECB president, she said at a press conference, a la the PALS conferences following the FOMC meetings, while the overall economic situation is expected to improve over 2021, there remains uncertainty surrounding the near-term economic outlook, relating in particular to the dynamics of the pandemic and the speed of vaccination campaigns. I'm not sure exactly what that says or what actually was meant to be said there, but new forecasts. Forecasts coming out of the ECB after their meeting is seeing slightly higher growth of 4% for 2021. That's the year as a whole. The inflation forecast there is also raised to 1.5% from 1.1% as seen in December. investors had started to doubt the ECB's commitment after bond purchase volumes actually decreased over the last 2 weeks, frustrating expectations that it would use its much-emphasized flexibility to run up market activity. Now, the ECB announcement did push European bond yields lower. Germany's 10-year yield, the benchmark for that region, extended its fall and was down another 4 basis points at midday to its lowest in over a week at negative 0.36.
Okay. So, you know, we were talking about, you know, the next big bill is going to be infrastructure spending. Trillions, $2 trillion is the number floating around, I believe. But, you know, whenever these numbers are out there, they, you know, they always go above and beyond the predictions. You know, I guess that's a little bit of inflation also. But it really is amazing. They're looking to include, I mean, supposedly in recent meetings with Biden and his top aides, they're proposing breaking up the projects from the pay-fors. One measure would include the billing proposals that both sides of the aisle seemingly would back. The other would include a set of provisions to cover the costs, including raising taxes on gas. That's good. Corporations, but we'll give them more ways to avoid it. Electric vehicles. Why would you raise taxes on electric vehicles when you're trying to eliminate fossil fuels? I mean, that's your goal, climate warming, climate change. Why would you tax electric vehicles more when you're trying to promote? So, I mean, it doesn't even make sense, but they have to tax. They have to get the money somewhere from you.
That's a head scratcher. I think somewhere I read that the average income of a person who buys an all electric vehicle is in the top averages in the top 10% of income in the country. So I wonder if that's just another we'll call it value added tax on the perceived wealthy. Because I agree. I mean, just from you know, the carbon emission standpoint, taxing electric vehicles makes little sense otherwise.
Well, then put the Keystone Pipeline back in effect. If the lower class of the population of this country will never go to electric because of the cost, put the Keystone back and give them something that they can afford.
Or make electric cars cheaper.
Well, that'll never happen. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody spending the rest of the program taking care of customer business. We're toll-free at 1-800-375-4188, or try us on the web at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. Well, it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. We're going to try something different this week. Rather than reciting a story that may or may not leave your head scratching, thinking, what in the world does this have to do with gold and silver? Or anything for that matter, we're going to introduce our new favorite singer-songwriter and his band, who are going to lament about the Fed. So I'll stop there and say without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome economic bluegrass guy Merle Hazard and his merry band of misfits. Take it away, Merle.
The Fed is watching the market. The market is watching the Fed. It's a game of follow the leader, but I'm not sure which one is being led. The Fed is watching the market. The market's watching back in return. Fundamentals are in tatters. I'm not sure it even matters what companies possess or what they earn. The Fed is watching the market. They're trying to protect us from shocks. When they speak of financial conditions, I'm thinking they really mean stocks. The Fed is watching the market. The market is returning its gaze. It makes some people wealthy, yet still it feels unhealthy when price and value part ways. The Fed believes in free markets, except not the market for cash. It helps make a bubble more likely when you cut rates at the first sign of a crash. The Fed is watching the market, but is there any bit of meat left in the soup? Incentives are perverse if valuation is recursive. We're caught in a financial feedback loop. Yes, we're caught in a financial feedback loop. Yeah, we're caught in a financial feedback loop. We're really caught in a financial feedback loop. We're caught in a financial feedback loop. Yes, we're caught in a financial feedback loop.
Thanks to our engineer and producer, Todd Waite, for queuing up good old Merle Hazard. We'll come back to Merle and his band from time to time in the coming weeks and months as we need some further comic relief, and I'm sure we'll need a lot of it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. Thank you, Merle. Okay, moving back to some serious stuff. Sorry, we haven't seen much news about last month's power outages in Texas in wake of an unprecedented snow and ice storm and temperature plunges until today, that is. The head of Texas's power regulator told state lawmakers this morning that any effort to retroactively reduce the power prices levied during a recent storm would be met with lawsuits that the state would likely lose. Of course, that came on the heels of multiple reports now from Texas residents who lost power, some for, you know, just 2 or 3 days, others for over a week, plus losing water pressure as a result. Many are still getting bottled water from 45 minutes to an hour away. Thankfully, there aren't nearly as many as they're used to, but some of those electric bills we were seeing were in the five digits, really crazy stuff. Now, the state's power grid operator raised power prices sharply during the February freeze that even pushed two power companies into bankruptcy. Others have warned of more potential bankruptcies. Top officials this week called on the Public Utility Commission of Texas to immediately reduce about $16 billion in power prices. But PUC Chair Arthur DeAndrea bluntly told the lawmakers at a hearing in the state capitol that any such repricing would trigger lawsuits and that the commission would lose. He warned that commodity contracts used to hedge power have closed and any repricing, quote, will have consequences for the state's power and for agriculture and other markets. He told a state committee, if I do it, I get sued and lose right away, adding that the Texas legislature could attempt to change the pricing by passing a bill, but that would also face lawsuits and would likely lose. Now, the state independent market advisor has recommended a pricing in the final 32 hours of the five-day emergency and called for some service fees to be cut, citing Texas grid rules. Emergency charges amounted to $16 billion for power and about $1.5 billion for service fees tied to the power price. The state's governor, lieutenant governor, and 28 of 32 of its state senators this week also called on the PUC and grid operator to correct the final 32 hours of power pricing, citing the recommendation and impact on utilities. The senators said this to DeAndrea in a letter they sent on Tuesday. These corrections are squarely within your authority, whether by your own action or an order to ERCOT. ERCOT is the short name for Texas's grid, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. I disagree with the senator's call, DeAndrea said. He is continually ruled out a power price rollback, arguing it's impossible to unscramble, insisting that the decision to raise prices during the cold snap was known to all Texas grid users. DeAndrea pushed back against the market's monitor's estimate of the power overcharges, telling lawmakers the amount was much smaller than $16 billion, about $3.2 billion, he said. So, we'll see how that plays out. We'll report back to you as we learn more. Now, this next story is a rather odd one. I really just read about it for the first time today, although it's been featured on a couple of the Travel Channel's conspiracy theory shows. So whether or not you've heard it so far, for those who haven't, let me tell you. This tale starts in the 1860s. When legend has it that a large wagon full of gold bullion was either stolen or went missing in a remote area of western Pennsylvania. The shipment had supposedly been on its way to the mint in Philadelphia, but it never arrived. This has led to any number of would-be treasure hunters to scour the forest out there looking for a massive payday. To no avail, alas. The amount of gold was rumored to be between 7 and 9 tons, making it worth hundreds of millions of dollars today. But all efforts to locate it had come up empty. That is, until 2018. A father and son team named Parada, who co-owned the treasure hunting outfit Finders Keepers, happened to be investigating a remote part of Elks County called Dent's Run. Using a sophisticated metal detector, they located what seemed to be a huge hit of something metallic. But the site sits on state land, and permission had to be obtained to do any excavating. For some reason or another, the Paradas ended up contacting the FBI about their, quote, discovery in January 2018. Well, it turns out the FBI hired an environmental survey outfit with a gravimeter to search the area. They confirmed that there was what they called a large metallic mass under the ground. 2 months later, the FBI climbed that hill with shovels and other excavating equipment to begin digging in secret themselves, so they thought. The Paradas and Warren Gettler, who's an author who researches lost Civil War era treasures, had arranged with the FBI to observe the dig. But that day and the next, the FBI told them to remain in their cars while they were on the site. So at the end of the second day, the FBI agents took the three men up to the site and showed them a giant empty hole, telling them nothing had been found. But neighbors around the area told investigators that they saw large numbers of FBI vehicles and earth-moving equipment, including dump trucks and backhoes, going back and forth throughout the area over that time period. And it was also happening at night when there was supposedly no digging going on and the Paradas and Gettler weren't even in the vicinity. Well, the story obviously didn't sit well with them, but the FBI continued to maintain that they had found nothing and had no further information to share. Now, however, 3 years later, through Freedom of Information Act requests and court orders, the FBI has released some emails on the subject. And like the Associated Press are saying, it certainly sounds like they know more about the story than they've been letting on. The documents, which attorney Bill Kluck provided, show that federal law enforcement was indeed after buried treasure. This is a quote now. We believe the cache itself is in the neighborhood of 3x5x8 feet to 5x5x8 feet. Those are the words of K.T. Newman, who's an assistant U.S. attorney in Philadelphia, or was in any event, in a 2018 email marked confidential. Kluck, meanwhile, still pursuing government material on the case, nearly 2,400 pages, as well as video files that the FBI has promised to turn over in response. All documents in the federal court case about the dig remain sealed. With nothing to hide, eh? Well, while the story may still sound kind of crazy, the actions of the FBI over the past few years cry out for explanations to a number of questions. First of all, the court order the FBI obtained to perform the dig cited the reason as being, quote, what evidence suggested may have been a cultural heritage site, unquote. Okay, so if you thought there might be a cultural heritage site there, wouldn't you send in some archaeologists rather than an army of FBI agents with dump trucks and backhoes? Next, if the FBI story is true and the entire trip turned out to be a waste of time, why are all of the court records still sealed? Why are the FBI fighting in court so hard to keep anyone from seeing the documentation related to the dig? What's so classified about an empty hole in the ground? Does that make any sense to you? And finally, when the treasure hunter's attorney petitioned the courts to force the FBI to turn over the records, Commonwealth Court Judge Kevin Bromson denied the petition. But in a footnote to his ruling, the judge reportedly listed the name of the sealed federal case. You want to know what it was? It was, quote, in the matter of seizure of one or more tons of United States gold, unquote. Now, that's telling. Well, the fight continues to this day to get the files unsealed. Go attorney Kluck. It doesn't seem possible that a group of FBI agents could have heisted that much gold just to keep for themselves without anyone noticing. They might have seized it on behalf of other government agencies, however. But if that's the case, why lie about it? In any event, ladies and gentlemen, There seems to be far more here than what meets the eye. Abreast of more of this story as it unfolds. Now, the remaining time left in this segment, Tyler Durden of the Zero Head website writes in their newsletter this week about an economic myth, as they call it. As the story goes, Durden writes, governments can print their way to prosperity. Just run the money printing press, hand out cash for consumers to spend, and the economy will hum. Peter Schiff calls it the Kelton myth, named for economist Stephanie Kelton. At the root of this tale is the notion that people can consume what they don't produce. But Schiff counters that just isn't possible. Kelton, as you may know, was Bernie Sanders' economic advisor and is a big proponent of MMT, Modern Monetary Theory, which we talk about from time to time on this program. Of course, Kelton's not a bit concerned about all that dollar printing. In fact, she says it's necessary. According to her, without all this new money, there wouldn't be enough spending to grow the economy. In a nutshell, we have, well, over 10 million unemployed people who don't have enough money, but if we run the printing press and continue to hand out stimulus, then they can spend. After all, isn't that what capitalism is all about, spending money? If people don't have money, we don't have economic growth. So if people don't have jobs and they're not earning money, it's up to the government to replace that income with freshly printed money, right? It doesn't make any difference whether you earn the money or if it's given to you. As long as we have spending, we'll have economic growth. Wrong. Schiff says Kelton couldn't be more incorrect. Rather, Schiff argues she is completely got the cart before the horse and doesn't understand that it's economic growth that creates spending, not the other way around. Simply put, Schiff says, you can't consume what has not been produced. He continues to say, if all you had to do was print money to create economic growth, then every country would have a booming economy. I mean, everyone's had a printing press for quite a long time, right? There's a big difference between earning money and just receiving it. That's particularly money that's been printed. When you have a job, you earn money because you've contributed some value to society. You've helped produce a product or provide a service. And as compensation, you earn some money that you can use to buy some of the goods and services in the economy that you helped create. We'll finish this story up when we get back from these few short messages. Stick around. I'm Dave Allen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TeamUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's in the office. Give her a call at 1-800-375-4188. Right before the break, we're talking about a debate between a hedge fund guy, gold investor Peter Schiff, and modern monetary theory economist and economic advisor to Bernie Sanders, Stephanie Kelton. Now, again, Schiff was saying when you have a job, you earn money because you've helped produce a product or provide a service. And as compensation, you earn some money that you can use to buy some of those goods and services that you helped to create. But if you don't create anything, if you don't have a job and the government just prints money and gives it to you, now you go out to spend it, well, he suggests that you've contributed little, if anything. Yet you're drawing from the supply of goods and services that you didn't help to expand. In other words, according to Schiff, it's pure inflation. And that's the nuance there. It's not saying you didn't contribute anything. It's just saying what you contributed is pure inflation. Prices just go up. And he says that's the only thing that can happen. But a lot of people are beginning to buy in what they call the theory that you can consume without producing. Schiff says the recent spike in commodity prices like copper due to inflation that we're seeing is just the beginning. But is it also the beginning of a massive and unprecedented bubble that we're about to see? One that's going to dwarf anything we've seen during the Great Recession or any time before or since then. Time will tell, ladies and gentlemen. Be prudent. Make sure you have enough of gold and silver in your portfolio. Now, let's move on the final segment by circling back to unemployment one last time for the day. And in many ways, the nation's unemployment systems have undergone a radical shift over the past year of the pandemic. For one thing, Washington, that is Congress, expanded benefits to millions of previously ineligible workers. For another, state labor agencies, the ones tasked with issuing aid, grew staffing to unprecedented levels. Many upgraded technology and processes, albeit late in many cases, to issue money, particularly the federal money, more rapidly. In one calendar cycle, they pumped out literally years' worth of cash to the jobless. Yet, by some measures, the system still felt short. Many waited months for benefits. In fact, thousands, tens of thousands, are still waiting for their first checks from last year. And stretched communications, whether phone or email, with many state workers still working from home, means workers can't easily get answers to their questions. Fundamental flaws remain that may hobble the country's ability to respond more effectively to the rest of this downturn, much less the next one. Many states are barely limping along from crisis to crisis anyway, and there's no way they can rebuild to address whatever may be coming next. State officials began issuing shutdown orders in mid-March last year to contain the virus, and states buckled under the intense volume of unemployment claims that resulted. More than 6 million people applied for benefits in two separate weeks shortly thereafter, almost 30 times the pre-pandemic load. In some respects, broad failures were inevitable, particularly in those early days. Funding to administer benefits typically ebbs and flows in boom and bust cycles. It rises in downturns and falls in good times. But however you measure it, unemployment had been at its lowest level in 5 decades before the pandemic hit. That meant inadequate resources for staff to, you know, field this just incredible deluge of phone calls. And the pandemic swiftly descended on the U.S., an immediate jolt that offered almost no time to brace for intense economic gut punches. Many states were also using old school technology dating to the disco era. I'm sorry I used that. The disco era, boy, talk about nightmarish memories. Benefit websites were swiftly knocked offline just from far too many people trying to access them at the same time. States were unable to code updates into their systems quickly. When Washington passed last year's pandemic relief measures, like the CARES Act, to extend and enhance jobless aid, the real-world repercussions? Thousands of unemployed workers waited months for benefits to arrive, stressing their ability to pay rent, buy food, and pay other bills. By July, states were making timely payments to about half of applicants. That was down 90% or more from pre-pandemic times, according to the U.S. Labor Department. The official barometer for the time for a timely first payment of benefits, by the way, 21 days. Now, states certainly have improved since then, but they're still missing timely benefits to just 3 in 4 applicants by the end of the year. And about 15% of recipients, that's over 120,000 people, had waited at least 2 months for the aid. Meanwhile, Florida's online portal, that's called Connect, which debuted in 2013 under the oversight of then-Governor Rick Scott, who's now a U.S. senator, its design was meant to literally frustrate applicants and reduce the amount of benefits paid. Interestingly, current Governor Ron DeSantis said, having studied how the unemployment system was internally constructed in Florida again, DeSantis said, I think the goal was for whoever designed it was let's put as many kind of pointless roadblocks along the way so people just throw up their hands and say, oh, the heck with it. I'm not going to do that. At one point, Florida officials were distributing paper applications because the state's online system was literally broken. Well, less than a quarter of Florida residents received timely payments in June. Today, almost 10 months later, technology is still proving to be an issue for them and other states. Wisconsin, for example, estimates that some self-employed contractors and gig workers there will have to wait until late April to get extra jobless benefits that were funded by the relief package passed in December. It's about 4 months. According to the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, our antiquated computer system doesn't allow all these programs to be launched at once. That's pitiful. The situation would have almost undoubtedly been much worse without improvements states made in several areas. Early on, they smoothed bottlenecks by amending filing processes, for example. Many, like Pennsylvania, which is my home state, restricted applications to certain days of the week based on the first letter of filers' last names. So like A through F, if that's what your last name began with, you can only file on Mondays, you know, G through M on Tuesdays, etc. Well, these systems are just an anachronism. They're set up for a Great Depression-era economy, not today's. One of the big things Congress has to decide going forward regarding unemployment is whether to permanently erect a program across the country that pays benefits to the self-employed freelancers and gig workers who typically don't qualify for state benefits. We've got a long way to go, ladies and gentlemen. As my former school superintendent friend once told me, wherever you are, the biggest room in our house or place of work is the room for improvement. Yeah, in the remaining time of today's program, let's jump across seas for some geopolitical news. France's foreign minister said today that time was running out to prevent Lebanon, it's the country of Lebanon, from collapsing, and that he could see no sign that the country's politicians there, that is Lebanon's, were doing anything or enough to do to save it. France has spearheaded international efforts to rescue the former French protectorate from its deepest crisis since the 1975 to 1990 Civil War. France is trying to use Paris's historical influence to persuade the squabbling politicians in Lebanon to adopt a reform roadmap and form a new government to unlock international aid. Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian told a news conference, "I'd be tempted to qualify Lebanese politicians as guilty of not helping a country in danger. They all committed to act to create an inclusive government and committed to implementing indispensable reforms that haven't occurred. That was 7 months ago. Nothing is moving. I think it's not too late, but the delays are going to lead to collapse." Now, Prime Minister designate, that's Lebanon's, Saad al-Hariri, is at loggerheads with President Michel Aoun and has been unable to form a new government since last October. Groups of protesters in Lebanon have been burning tires daily to block roads since the Lebanese currency tumbled to new lows, deepening a popular anger over that country's financial collapse. Now, Le Drian said, "It's up to the Lebanese authorities to take their destiny in hand, knowing that the international community is looking with concern. There's still time to act today, but tomorrow will be too late." Sounds like what's going on in Lebanon is, let's use a word that I'm sure it's overused, but probably appropriate in this case. The threat there is existential. Now, Afghan political leaders, including former President Hamid Karzai, are mulling whether to attend a meeting, an upcoming meeting, organized by Russia. It's a summit to jumpstart Afghanistan's peace process. Remember that? As diplomacy by foreign powers, including Washington, ramps up. Russia plans to hold a conference on Afghanistan in Moscow next Wednesday and has invited several regional players to participate. It comes at a crunch time for the peace process as a May 1 deadline for foreign troops to withdraw from Afghanistan looms, and the U.S. continues reviewing its own plans. Peace negotiations between the Afghan government and insurgent Taliban in Qatar's capital of Doha have struggled to make progress. Mohammed Naeem, a spokesperson for the Taliban, said it had received an invitation from Moscow, but hasn't decided whether or not it's going to attend. Now, former President Karzai, as well as his former vice president, former warlord, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, have received invitations. Only the vice president, Karim Khalili, has confirmed he would attend. Now, the summit comes at a sensitive time, as current Afghan president Ashraf Ghani faces pressure after U.S. special envoy there proposed plans recently for a transitional government during a regional visit last week. That's an option Ghani has rejected. In fact, he rejected it in what was called a fiery speech over the weekend, saying only that elections could determine the composition of any new governments. Last but not least, ladies and gentlemen, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced that he postponed a visit to the UAE today because Jordan delayed granting overflight rights, supposedly, drawing a rare reboot from Jordan over a contested Jerusalem holy site. Now, a high-profile first visit to Abu Dhabi in the build-up to an Israeli election on March 23rd would have allowed Netanyahu to put his handprint on Israeli-UAE normalization ties that were formalized late last year. A holdup in permission for Netanyahu's play to overfly Jordan apparently stemmed from the cancellation of a visit by Jordanian Crown Prince Hussein bin Abdullah to Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque yesterday over a dispute regarding security arrangements there. Netanyahu said that he and Abu Dhabi's Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan had since spoken and had agreed to reschedule and to cooperate in the flight against COVID, as well as on huge investment projects, summing a total of $10 billion. So a new age, perhaps, in that part of the world, a new era of cooperation. We'll see how that goes in the coming months. In the meantime, that's all the time we have left to yak for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody and Butch will return tomorrow. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly blog and your email inboxes tomorrow. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks for listening, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me on